Well, we don't even need to take a break now because that was the break.
I kind of forgot two of the most important. Make sure you're drinking your Founders.
We are. And what is the beer tonight we're drinking? What are you drinking, by the way?
I've got the Masagave.
Masagave tonight?
Yeah, but what was the special Masagave you got me?
I think it was the...
Prickly Pear.
Prickly Pear, because it allows you to be a commercial segment.
It does. And, of course, I'm drinking the All Day IPA. And you mentioned Tin Cup Whiskey. Of course, we're drinking... what are we drinking tonight? The rye or the... What are we
I'm not sure what they poured, but...
Oh, we're drinking the rye tonight. The rye. So, cheers to everybody.
And there's a 10-year-old? Is that what you said?
There's a 10-year, which is great.
Yeah. Brian might find those commercials any day.
Okay, well, that was the commercial. Okay.
I think I covered them all. Well, I hate to break to y'all, but I was going to sneak out during that commercial segment because there's two small children just sitting in the house right
That's
now.
That's not good. That's
with
not
food
good.
Still on the counter.
Well, Beck, thanks for hanging with us for a little over an hour. That was awesome.
Thanks.
And the sponsor recap was great.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. It was awesome.
Miss Janet will be so proud.
She will be proud of you. You know it better than I did.
Okay, bye, everyone.
Bye, Beck.
See ya.
Kiss them kids for me. Let me also remind everybody, if you're watching over on Facebook, we do have a Ike Live gift bag. If you like and share the Facebook feed, you're going to be entered in a chance to win that amazing bag. Don't forget, if you've got a question or a comment for anything you're hearing tonight, please hit us up on the IMs. Dave's handling them over there tonight. Also, I'll start checking the other social media feeds at Ike Live Show, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you got any questions, send them through. Brian, we're good. We don't even need a break. Anybody have to pee? Yeah. We're good.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. They're just not here.
You know what's funny, though? You're
I think they got, redone.
I don't know, but here's the – looking at it from this way, the funniest thing is, you know, I can tell you're, looking. You're like, oh, they're just not here. But then I see you, looking, on the floor, they've fallen somewhere.
It's such a
Here's
mess.
The commercial segment. It's sitting here, it's fallen. Take this.
Oh, I had the back of the computer off. I took the guy my screwdriver out. I was looking. It was inside. It's not in there.
It's an old, Commodore 64.
Yeah.
Taking the big panel off.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. But if you want, I can get our guests up. Just give me a couple minutes to give them the signal.
That'll work.
All right.
That'll work.
Cool.
All right. While we're doing that, Mark, I'm trying to go back to the annals of history here for me. And I think one of the first tournaments I remember meeting you, or maybe at that point I was still a quiet little co-angler, but I remember seeing you at a Delaware River tournament through the Federation. And back then we used to launch it. I think it was Frankfurt Arsenal, wasn't it?
Oh God. Yeah.
All, a long time ago.
Yeah.
And
Burlington.
Yeah. And there was a certain reputation back then among anglers, right? And it was funny because it was Richie Schneiderite.
Yep.
It was of course Ed Cowan. It was you. There were certain guys, and I remember I was new to the Federation at that time, you know? So it's almost like a school dance, you know? It's the cool kids and then yeah. Everybody else, you know? And I remember, you know, just oh, man, looking I want to be one of those guys one day, you know? And just I want to be a guy that walks up to weigh in and you know, everybody's that's the guy. You know, you were that guy when I started fishing the Federation.
Wow, that's cool.
It's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And that's what I mean. This has all come full circle, you know? And then I got to compete. And, you know, for me, it was a stair step. It took me a couple years, and I started to find my groove. And then I made a team and made a divisional. And, you know, it all started to happen. But, dude, it seems like yesterday. And that was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
That was 30 years ago.
Yep.
And it seemed like yesterday.
Yeah, I think the first year I fished the Federation was 1988.
88, yeah.
My first year.
Yeah.
And or 87 might have been I think 87, it's when I got in the Garden State Bassmaster. I lived over in Williamstown around, you know, I lived on a pike though, but anyway, there's five lakes over there.
Yeah.
And nobody fished, didn't say nothing. So anyway, I go to this Bass Expo show up at the Civic Center, and who do I run into? The guys, Garden State Bassmasters.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, there's clubs?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
You didn't even know.
No, I had no clue. I mean, even though I was going to Angler's Pro Shop, Don was a, you know, great guy, and he, some of the best, you know, I learned more from that dude.
Shout out to Don Skye.
Absolutely.
Shout out to Hydra Spinnerbaits.
Oh, my God.
Hydra Galinsky.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, yeah. I'll tell you what, that Hydra Lure Spinnerbait, the guys, you talk about Richie Schneiderite, George Hodgson, Ray Schmid. Let's go back even further. How about Jack Coyote?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tom Prashevich. I think Tom's still fishing. I know Ray Schmidt's still fishing.
I got a great Tom story.
And there's a lot of them, dude. There's a lot of them. But, you know, and I got very fortunate because my first year back, like I said, when I was in Garden State, they always incorporated one of their club tournaments with the Federation.
Yeah.
And the first one was on Lake Apacon. Well, you know, I have in aluminum boats, little John boats and all, and you go to Lake Apacon, and the next thing you know, there's like 80, 90 of these bass boats. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, remember your first time seeing it?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, my, this is. And then I got one. And then I'm like, I want one of these.
Yeah.
But then I competed on Garden State with them. You know, you had to fish their club tournaments, and I made their team. And I didn't even fish their team because I wound up joining Mega Bass 6.
Yeah.
George Hutcherson.
Yeah.
One of the old school that's still fishing. George is still fishing with us today, and he's still one of the better fishermen. I'll tell you what, I got fortunate to get around, like you said, the guys that
– Good guys.
Good guys that were willing to show me and help, you know, what they did.
Right.
And, you know, so I, you know, when I was a rider, I fished with Jack Coyote on the Hudson River. Back in the day, Jack Coyote was one of the sticks on the Hudson River, so I got to learn from him how to – he showed me things to run to do. And I was very, very fortunate that a lot of the older guys that were very successful in the nation back in the time, these guys fished bass back then.
Yeah.
Coyote, Steve Wisniewski.
Yeah.
You know, Brian and his son, I mean, they moved. We're still in touch with them. John Carpenter.
John Carpenter, yeah.
All these sticks to fish. Well, I got to fish with a Jack Coyote, and these guys actually opened up and shared things with me back when everybody was more tight-lipped.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays, I mean, you guys run into me anywhere. I'm honest. Some people say, dude, why'd you tell them that?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's not the case. I just I have a philosophy. You can't make the cast I make. So, you know, in other words, I don't mean I'm not being like you can't make a cast into a bucket. I'm talking about all right. You know where we were fishing yesterday, right? What are the odds you making that exact same cast I made?
Yeah,
right.
That's
right.
Pretty slim.
So I got an old school. Do you remember Stu Riccio?
Yeah.
So
Stu Riccio.
I was a kid. And I drew him on Greenwood as a co-angler. And it was the first big boat I ever drove. He let me drive the boat on Greenwood. I didn't want to drive it too long. I was afraid.
Yeah.
I didn't know. We were in crawdads at the time.
Greenwood Lake.
I was afraid I was going to hit something. I was just like, I drove for maybe no more than 15 seconds before I, like, powered it down. Like, nah, I'm good. Like, I didn't even get to enjoy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, those guys, there was back, but like I said, those guys kind of opened up to me. And when I fished with Tom Perivich on Greenwood Lake. So I got really lucky and got drawn with, really, my first year as a co-angler with all the top guns.
With the good guys, and you were able to watch and learn and listen.
Sometimes you learn what not to do.
Right.
So that was really that's what got me started. I mean, once I got that, I bought my first bass boat from George Hutcherson. I got that. I think that was 1988. And then I made it to my first year. I didn't make the team that year on the nation, but I made it through Operation Bass. I'm up fishing down in Kentucky Lake, some young kid, and you know how big Kentucky Lake is.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I'm talking about intimidation.
Yeah.
You come from the Northeast, he's a little late, and you go down there, you're like – Wow. Yeah.
Well, you thought Hapakong was big, and then you get there.
You look at the map, you're like, there's three maps? I know how to break stuff down. Yeah. I, you know, you don't fish all three maps. Yeah. You know, you do your process and come up with where you want to go and stuff like that. But I feel honored you say that about me at the river. I don't think of myself anything.
Yeah, you were the guy. You, that group you named and – more, you were the guys. And for, you know, for me coming in, it was like, I want to do. I want to be that guy. I want to have that respect, that reputation.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to do things that you think. I was going to say, when I fished with one year, we went up to Thousand Islands. And I drove up with George Hutchison in his van. You know, back we slept in vans and all that stuff back in the day. Everybody did, right?
You
put in your time, you know. We all start out sleeping in back of trucks and working our butts off Friday nights, leaving, driving up, and stay. Where'd we stay at Lake Apacon? Lake Apacon, I forget where we stayed, but Greenwood Lake, we all stay at that diner up there and sleep behind a diner. We all get up in the morning and get breakfast. Right? Or half the guys would just stay up all night drinking and, you know, slobbering in the morning. And but, you know, I got to experience all that stuff with those guys. But anyway, talk about the hydro spinnerbait. Don was one of the first people that his silver shiner, and he made, he called it like a herring, a blue herring. It was a black, blue tinsel, white belly, red gills. Don was a big, he taught, dude, that red gill.
Yeah, the red.
Yeah.
Well, what's every red
gill? Parachute front.
Parachute. Yeah. Oh, dude. God, I wish they still make them. Yeah. But, there are some companies that come close, but nothing is like a hydro. But them guys kind of were laughing at me because I fished with Jack Chiotti up on he one day. I got the fish rare. I fished with George and Jack and I forget Richie maybe. And my spinnerbait, the guy, I was waffling him. I was kicking his ass. And he's like, turns around, looks like at my spinnerbait, goes, "What the hell is that? A Studio 54 spinnerbait?" You know? So now I'm known as the guy he throws them Studio 54 spinnerbaits. It's got all that tinsel. It's got this. It's got, you know. And I'm like, you want one?
Yeah.
No, we don't want one. Yeah. No, we're good. We're no good. And I don't think it was until that club was Clearwater.
Yeah, I remember that.
Richie and all them guys. And it took Petey to get in the club with them.
Yeah.
And Petey kicked their ass out of the back of their boats with the hydros.
With the hydra.
Then they woke up.
Yeah.
And then Don kind of, the business, he just.
Here's the thing, though. We bust Dave's balls about it all the time, about being a little ahead of his time, you know, in our circle. But I think Don was
way
really ahead of his time. You got to admit.
Way.
He was really ahead of his time.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Brian was the first one in our group to bring the Skolinski spinbait into the. I remember laughing at him on Champlain.
I think you're right.
And he outfished me 3-1 with it.
I think Brian was one of the first ones.
I got
that
from Rick Mashinsky, I think.
Old man Rick.
I was laughing at that thing. Like, I was throwing Stanley was my. That Stanley was the spinnerbait back in like late 80s, early 90s. You know what I mean? And he's throwing out. I'm like, dude, what is that thing, dude?
Yeah, my introduction to it when I first got one was, do you remember the Garden State Expo?
Yeah.
Used to be at the old racetrack.
Yeah.
You won the tackle box.
I won the tackle box.
How do you remember that?
Because I was working at the Anglers Pro Shop. I worked that show, and this young kid that came up with his bag all shit on.
That was me.
I was with
that was
there.
That was pre-federation. I was a fucking little punk.
15 maybe?
Oh, yeah. I was a little punk. And Brian always busted my balls about it because, like, we all at that show, we all put 50 tickets in or whatever. Yeah. We put as many. I can't remember.
Of course you win. You know?
But I won.
Yep. Yeah.
Always.
I remember that.
Dude, I couldn't believe it.
It was that big two-sided, that big
It was a double box.
I top of the line.
Load it, dude. All the Hydra stuff was in there. Dance's eel. Like,
that moment right there, like we were both naked. You know, like that was like, that was that moment where, like, you know, where my life went a certain way and Mike's went a certain way. You know what I mean? That was a pivotal moment.
But
I would put myself on the camera, Mike, but.
Brian, like you and I immediately take this raffle. But Brian, Becky was saying earlier about visualizing success. Brian and I take our raffle tickets. We already know we can throw them out.
Yep.
He holds on to them a year later because he knows someone's going to call him later and say, "Hey, there was a mistake. You actually won." You know?
Oh my God. Oh my God.
But that's the difference.
Yeah. But that was my introduction to it. But that was.
I had no idea back then that you were going to be a classic champion.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But you know what? You thought you were going to be.
Man, I was into it.
Because one thing you got to be in this sport, one thing I noticed, and a lot of people, some people don't like it, you got to be a little cocky.
Yeah. Well, you got to have confidence. I think cockiness and confidence
are very close. It ain't bragging if you can back it up.
Yeah.
They're
very close.
That's all success across the board. There's,
yeah.
No one's like a meek class B that, you know,
right.
B personality that
yeah,
kills
you
it.
Yeah, you got to be aggressive you gotta and be you got to have that desire. And as a young kid, he did. And, you know, you pay attention when you hook up with guys like a Don Sky, you know, it's, he was, he has so many theories.
Yeah.
That it's a shame they weren't they weren't unable to capitalize on it, because half the my own personal opinion, I'll bet you at least 25% of the products that are on the market today, guys are winning tournaments today. Don had it in his pocket, designed it 30 years ago.
Yeah.
You know,
it's crazy, man.
Yeah. So for you youngins watching, there was no internet, obviously, for us in the late 80s, early 90s. There
no
was
cell phones.
So they had these books, these periodicals they would put out, like New Jersey, you know, bass fishing lakes. And it would be like different authors would contribute to what works on what lake.
Yeah.
Well, Brian and I went to Lake George like a long time ago, and we're reading Lake George's version of that. And Brian, in like his best like bill collector voice, was like reading it. And it was just like, it was, I don't know, I'll never forget, like him, like, bass can be taken in the summertime. But I don't know. But
that's bass like, can be taken.
Skolinski was in all of those types of periodicals.
Yeah, he was ahead of his time, with not just with bait and lure design and all that, but with the theory.
The
You're
media.
Right.
The whole media.
All
he was
of it, for
in.
Sure.
He used to have...
like fish movement, like how they migrate it.
You know, I'll give a little secret out that a lot of people aren't really... didn't realize, but years ago, Don would always do slideshows, you know, at his seminars at his thing. I actually was fortunate enough that gave seminars back in the day at his shop also. But Don did a seminar, and he would go out, and he caught these, you know, wild shiners. And he takes these shiners, and he puts them in his live well in his boat. And then he takes them out and puts them in there, and he gets the light on, takes a picture of them from looking down at them. And then we take lizards. And we took the lizards, and we put them on the bottom of the live well and took pictures of them. And then took the lizards in a live well and put the shiners in there, and you take the pictures and you look at them. And that's when I learned about fish see silhouettes. There might be some lizards in the water, but you don't see lizards swimming around the water.
Yeah.
Because fish see silhouettes.
Right.
That's what they see. I mean, what's the Cinco look like?
Right.
It's silhouettes of bait fish. That's,
right.
That's the only thing it does. You know, a thin perch, you know, they see that silhouette. But when he showed me that many years ago, that opened up.
That's crazy.
That opened up my eyes to everything, you know, like, you know, when you first see a brush hog, the first time you ever saw a brush hog, you're like,
That's the stupidest thing I ever saw. Those elbows locked in.
Yo, lay that thing on a trash can and take a crayfish on your trash can and look at it. You're going to go, damn.
Yeah. All right. Hold on. Speaking of ahead of their time, Brian DeCarpenter.
Yes.
We have a special guest joining us.
Or two.
Who do we got coming on? My eyes are terrible. I can't
see
the screen.
That's so awesome.
It's so small. Who do we got coming on?
We have your old travel buddies, man.
Who do we got here?
It's Solly Amansa.
Hey! Jesus, what a motley crew that is. Dave Mansu, Bob Solly, joining us right now via the Zoom machine. Guys, how you doing tonight?
Fantastic.
Officer Mansu?
Doesn't he look fantastic?
Absolutely.
He is definitely a pretty bitch.
All right. First things first. Dave, first things first, we got Mark sitting over here, just won the event yesterday. You want to say anything to this guy?
Mark, first off, as a cancer survivor, awesome job, dude. I'm so proud of you. You know, to have won his tournament, and we all know what he, you know, what a close friend he is, and everything that he does through his Ike Foundation, to have won that with your daughter. Dude, that's got to be an amazing, amazing feeling. Yeah. A moment in your life you'll never forget.
Yeah, we'll never forget it, dude. It's a lifetime. I appreciate that, Dave. It's good to see you on TV. I kind of missed you around, dude. I mean, we had some good times when we were all traveling together.
We certainly did some crazy stuff,
but it's, to go through what I went through. But just to share it with my daughter, that's why I said, you know, we got the things that her and I shared on that boat.
Yeah.
And those, just that whole day.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I can share my story, but... Man, I'll tell you what, it's just, that's why I said, yo, we got a lifetime of memories now.
Yeah.
I mean, forget about that money for that boat. That money spent and gone, man. That trophy that she'll be able to look at when I'm dead and gone, she could pass it on to her family and friends. Like, I fished with with your pop. That's who I, you know.
Super cool.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, what it's all about. That's unbelievable. Dave and Bob, we were talking old times. We were talking the Federation back when the Federation was the Federation, right? You know, I'm just going to tell it how it is. you know, after the split up of FLW and Bass, you know, it's never been exactly the same. Back then when we fished it, dude, it was strong. There were more members than ever.
It was a big deal.
It was a big, big, big deal.
And it was all boater on boater.
It was boater on boater.
Or co-angler, didn't matter. Everybody fished together.
I mean, you had the best anglers in the country from every state all trying to headhunt you to make it, you know, to make the classic. But, Bob, I'm going to start with you. Dude, you had tremendous success. You were one of the guys to beat. What did fishing the Federation back there? What did it mean? Because it was special, and I know you know that. But what did it mean to you?
It was totally special. It was, you know, because you look at the Federation back then and how strong you say it was, and any Federation tournament we went out on, we had five classic qualifiers, you know, launching that day, and we drew 100 boats at every tournament, man. And the fields were strong, and one guy, you know, Mark Schaefer and the Eddie Cowans and Snyderites and dudes, I mean, that I looked up to, and they were just, you know, amazing fishermen. And I was like you, I wanted to be one of those guys, you know, and, you know, you had to put your nose down and fish really hard. And like, it was a totally different world back then to what it is now. And it's never been the same, like you said, once the Federation split up. But, you know, Mark was there. And, you know, one thing I love about Mark, I met him at a divisional in 1995. He comes rolling up playing Voodoo by Godsmack. And the dude's a power hitter. Come on. You know, how could I not like this guy, man? So, you know.
Voodoo. Hey, Bob, do you remember when the first time we actually met up at Racetown?
Yeah, dude, yeah.
You were rooming with Mike Wallace.
Yeah.
And I walk up, I take my hat off. I have, you know, kind of lacking in hair, right? I go walking up, and there's Bob and Mike Wallace. And he comes out. Bob comes out. He got a beer in his hand. And he goes, dude, if I was to drink my balls over your head, you look like a hippie with earmuffs. First thing the man ever said to me. I started voting. And he goes, dude, I'm only kidding, dude. I was pissed. I was like, dude, it is okay. We've been buddies ever since. I said, I know I'd like this guy.
All right. Dave Mantu, are you surprised Bob said something like that?
Are you kidding?
Oh my God!
I think that's his greeting.
Yeah, the dick and ass fuckings. But pretty much how Bob's going to greet you, dude.
I'll tell you another funny story, man. Is that I met Dave. I met Dave in the Federation, dude, by cutting him off at Harve de Grace. He still talks about it today, dude. I'm like, get over it, dude. It was like 25 years ago. I'm in a submarine or something, dude, and caught a 3-pounder. Then he's sending me love notes. He wants to fish tournaments with me, dude. What are you, complaining I cut you off, or you want to fish with me, man?
So the best thing that ever happened, Mike, is when I left, I said, you know, you're going to miss me. You know what F you, dude, I'm never going to miss you. You know, he goes the whole ball sack thing. And I'm like, you're going to miss me, all right? The first tournament that I'm not there with him, he fishes with Junior. And the next thing you know, I get a picture of the back of Bob's head with a jerk bait with three hooks stuck in the back of his head.
What a disaster.
You missed me.
Oh, man. That is unbelievable. That sounds like Junior.
Hey, Bob, was that the last time you fished with Junior?
Yeah, I fished with him that year, dude, but it was like a total train wreck. You know, I was used to fishing with the cop, dude. Everything's done. You know, the boat's immaculate, man. Everything's taken care of, man. I mean, me and Dave had some good tournament, you know, finishes together. We had a couple good years there fishing, man. It was a lot of fun. And you know, but when he left, dude, this is how it ended. You know, he talks me into coming over to help him move, you know. Oh, yeah, it's going to be you and a bunch of guys. I show up. It's like me and one of his friends. It's 95 degrees out, dude. We got to move his entire house because he's hurt, dude. You know what I mean? We're sweating to death. The guy has no beer, no food, no nothing for us, man.
No hand trucks to move the heavy shit.
No, it's all manual. It's all manual labor.
Dude, I was like, man.
Well, there's that payback for cutting him off.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun tournaments,
Bob,
out there.
Hey, Bob, that's an old cop trick. I used an old top rod meeting one time to move myself from my mom's house to my apartment in Camden, dude. I had like all these, I had like 30 days moving my shit, dude. It was like, we're at the meeting at my apartment, but we got to meet at my mom's first.
Wow.
Remember that, guys?
Wow, I do remember that. Tricky. You guys are tricky. What I wanted to say, though, is there were so many really talented anglers that fished that federation back then.
Amazing.
And it's not restricted to Jersey, because I'm sure every state had it, but there was that circle of 10, 15 guys that all of them could have been fishing the top tour level events at the time.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
The absolute best. We were talking about Eddie Cowan, you know, off camera, and Eddie was doing stuff back then that nobody was doing. He was punching before punching was a thing.
Yep.
He was sight fishing before anybody knew what sight fishing was. So
yeah.
It was an amazing time. You know, for me to be around you guys in that federation time was an amazing time for me. You take that away from personally from my career, you take those 5, 4, 5, 6 years away, dude, I'm not here right now.
Yeah, I think the guys, the talent that we had back when Bob and his brother and Dave and,
yeah.
You know, and Petey started coming along. You always had Richie Schneiderite. There is, you know, and Hutchie. And there's always, you know, the new guys come on, like, you know, Ike and, you know, even myself come along. Guys are like, you know, and they tell you, you know, we just came out with open eyes and we're like, wow, look at the competition. You did your own thing. We all became successful. And best thing that came out of those years is the friendship that we have right now.
Yeah, I'd agree with
right,
that.
Right, Bobby?
I'd agree
Dave,
with that.
Dave, I mean, dude. You know, yeah. Bob moved down. He's a South Jersey boy now. He lives in the hood. So we got to, you know, it's just, but, you know, from those days of meeting through the fishing, you just, you form a bond with, you know, where we all bust balls.
Yeah.
We all like to have fun,
yeah.
But when it comes to fishing, it's game on,
yeah.
And they're all good sticks, and it pushed every one of us to be good, dude. To make the New Jersey State team back in the day, was one of the hardest things to do.
Super hard,
Jesus.
Difficult.
Like Bob said, there was 5 classic qualifiers out there. Like that's back then.
Unbelievable, and that's it.
Hey, think about this though, Mark. I mean, all of us that traveled together. All right, we came out of the Federation. I remember Mike and Pete talking me into fishing the Invitationals, and I had made the state team 2 years in a row. And I had really just gotten into tournament fishing, and I knew that, man, I had a lot to learn. And thankfully, you know, guys like you and Bob taught me an awful lot, Eddie Cowan and everything. But just think about it. You, Mike, Bob, Ted, myself, Pete, we all qualified for the top 150,
yep.
Which was the elites of the day.
Yeah.
You know, out of the Federation.
Dude, that,
you talk about competition that's preparing you for that next level.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any better.
That's incredible. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that was like the next thing, right? Like, we all had success at the Federation, and we were fishing against guys that we thought were the best. You know, we thought they were the best in the world. And then when we decided to fish the Invitationals, right, all together, this motley crew traveling around to new places, not Greenwood, Hopatcong, Delaware River, Hudson River, right? Not our normal stomping grounds, but all of a sudden, we took the leap of faith to try this national circuit called the Invitationals. And in the same year, all of us qualified for the tour. Yeah. All guys from Jersey, all at one time qualified to. Dude, that was saying something.
Yeah, that was my second year fishing the Invitationals. My first year I fished them. I was surprised when it got done. I was like, because they took the top 25, you know, out of, what, almost 400 fishermen?
Yeah.
And I remember I finished like, I finished 30th or 31st. And I'm like, wow, how in the hell is some dude from South Jersey?
Yeah.
I have no experience, you know, a reservoir. What the hell's a reservoir? Man, yeah. You're on the fly, learn. Yeah, you go out to Lake St. Clair, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Man, the bodies of water, the place we all went. And then that second year, here comes these guys are all, and I'm like, cool. And we all got together. We all traveled together. We stayed in houses and bus balls, left, had great times. Yeah. And, you know, I wasn't there when Dave won his Invitational, but I was there when you won. I was there when Pete won, and then we went to the 150s, and you smoked. I'll never forget that when you're up Champlain, at the end of the tournament because he used to use nets. Mike's netting fish and they're going through the net because he kept cutting the turk bait out of the net to the point where at the last day he's netting fish. He's like, oh, my net's no good. I fucking cut it open.
You said something I want people to listen to, like, that are not from our part of the country. There's not a place in New Jersey where we can't see the shoreline where we're at.
No.
So when you go to a place like St. Clair or Erie and Okeechobee, when you just see sky, it was mind-blowing to us.
Oh, yeah. and cypress trees.
Yeah.
Wow, they're in the water?
Yeah, like, what are these trees in the water for? Our trees are all on the shoreline.
Yeah, there are trees in the water.
In fact, I think our biggest body of water is probably Greenwood or Pahkong, and you're not even – probably 2,000 acres, maybe.
Well,
right?
Back in the day, it was actually the Susquehanna.
Susquehanna's.
But the only place you fished was in the Haverty Creek Marina,
right?
Or maybe the one over the Texaco Dock in over there in the Bohemia.
Yeah.
You know, there was so really didn't fish big.
But right. You could see the shoreline.
Yeah.
It's not like going across Erie or St. Clair when it's just dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Our waves get to 10 feet.
Hey, Mark, I got a question for you, man. You know, a lot of these guys that fish the flats today, they have no idea what it was like 25 or 30 years ago to fish that place.
No.
None. I seen 12 pounds won a 2-day tournament there one time.
Oh, yeah.
There was no grass in it, dude. It was, like, horrendous. And, you know, I know you've been fishing it for at least 30 years, man.
Yep.
Like, what have your experiences been over that time? Because I can tell you that the one tournament I remember the most when I knew things were different were we fished. It was a June tournament. And I came in, I had, like, 20 pounds, and I figured I won because the biggest bag I ever saw was 14 pounds, dude. And Swiss Stack brings in 22. You had, like, 19. Belushi had, like, 19. I'm like, dude, what's going on with this place all of a sudden? You know what I mean? And, but, you know, the fishing has changed so much down there. It's, you know, for me, because, like, I've had time away from fishing there, and then, you know, I kind of got back, you know, just here and there dobbing in tournaments or whatever, and how much different it fishes now compared to what it did, you know, 25 or 30 years ago.
Well, I think that's one thing we're very fortunate of to experience is how a body of water, like the Upper Chesapeake tidal, and it's something for the guys that, you know, I feel good about how you have to adjust. You know, back in the day, I forget what year it was. I think it might have been 89 because the regional I qualified for through Operation Bass was on Kerr Reservoir. I wanted to go down and fish, and the flats, dude, it sucks. You know, if you catch a fish, you catch a limit, you're like, yay, a limit. And I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
But my club, you know, back in the day, we had club rules. You know, you had to fish, so I fished. So I got pissed. I went up in the Sassafras and sat on one point all day and won the tournament with a whole 9 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, but there was nothing else to fish because I was like, where are you going to go? The marinas are going to be full. I don't like fishing around crowds.
Yeah.
I don't like that. So, and then, you know, as the place progressed, you know, sod banks, you know, little eelgrass patches started showing up. Eelgrass has been a big player for a lot of years, and it's still a player. You just got to know when and how to fish it. And, you know, wood was a big key for a lot of years. Basically all hard structure. Anything rock, wood, was pretty much, or undercut banks.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
Then certain areas of the river started growing grass down south, and that became the better way to fish is further away from, you know, get down south, not north. And then I don't know exactly what year it was, but look at all of a sudden that grass, that main flat, that milfoil
came back.
Man, when that milfoil got in there, you always got to fish with an open mind. The flats is a perfect place if you're a power fisherman.
Hmm.
And it's a good place for your finesse fishing. But coming up through all those years of fishing it, you know, put a hydro spin in your hand, a jig. You know, we didn't have Senkos back in the day. So, you know, it was a
power worm.
Berkeley Power.
Blue Fleck.
Yeah. Yeah, they're still in the boat today.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Blue Fleck Power is always in the boat.
Still working. All right, I'm going to start with Dave. I'm going to go around the room here. Dave, give us one good story from something you remember. It could be funny. It could be feel good. It could be whatever. From when we all traveled together. I want to hear one good story from you, Dave. Then, Bob, I'm going to go to you next. Give me a good one from when we all traveled together.
Oh, man.
Man, there are so many. Oh my God, to pick one out is really difficult, but probably, you know, and I've told you this before. So Bob's brother Ted is a trained chef. All right. Yeah. And I'm a fairly good cook, and we all eat pretty good when we travel together.
Oh God, yeah. But
would take it upon himself to go to Arby's and fill a cooler full of Arby's burgers and fries and whatnot. And despite having all this good food there, he'd come in at the end of the night, and there he was just munching on these nasty ass week old fries and burgers and whatnot. And I just couldn't believe that you could have enough stamina to fish all day long with the way you ate. I mean, it just boggled my mind the way you ate back in the day. But man, there are so many great stories from back then. Elvis, remember Elvis?
Elvis,
the towel, the Elvis show.
Yeah,
towel.
Champlain, yeah.
Delfonso.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Elvis.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And then, Bob used to ride his ass, did he?
And oh, man. But you guys called him Elvis? I never knew that.
Elvis, yeah. Oh, yeah, Elvis.
And of course, Soli, you fish with him, and every time your bait gets stuck, you know, you say, hey, dude, I'm home. Dude, you ain't never been home. So, there's a lot of stories here that I just can't tell.
Many good ones. Bob, give us a good one from back in the day when we all traveled together like a motley crew.
Ah, dude, it was such a mess, man. I mean, the first time I remember staying with you, dude, like me, I had two rods. I didn't even own a spinning rod, dude, you know? And I come back in the room, looked like tackle warehouse. Stuff's everywhere, man. You're tying your stuff up until midnight. I just tied my two rods up, a jig and a spinner bait, and I was done, man. That was it. But, you know, Mark always brought John Erickson with him, who slept wherever, on the floor, on the couch, had a sleeping bag. But I don't know if you guys remember, you were there when Pete brought Ken McIntosh to stay back at the house. I think we were in Alabama. Dude, the guy comes in. Pete's like, oh, yeah, he's a real nice guy. He's going to stay here with us, man. So he goes to sleep. We're all in a room sleeping. There was like bunk beds in there. Dude, it was like three trains and a 747 just came right over the top of the place, man. This is how loud the guy snored, man. And we all came running out of the room with like pillows over our ears. And
oh, you know, my God. Ken McIntosh.
Wow. But, you know,
Hey, Bob, Pete has like a trend of bringing bad shit around people, dude.
Oh, yeah.
He's brought some bad stuff to Ike's house, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I just remember, like, you know, it was always a lot of fun. And, you know, we always had a lot of success, man. I mean, at one tournament, the last tournament, you know, I think it was the first year I fished the Invitationals. You know, Pete won a tournament. I qualified for the Classic. I think every one of us finished in the money. You know, it was just like, you know, we're from Jersey, dude. You know, nobody even heard of a guy from Jersey, man, you know. And Mike, you kind of put us on the map and stuff fishing wise, but, you know, it was always just such a good time, a great group of guys, you know. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for Mark as a fisherman. And, you know, him winning yesterday, dude, it was like, you know, the best thing that could ever happen. You know, it was just like so exciting for me. Even my wife, you know, we were excited here because, you know, Mark won a tournament, you know, because we stayed close over all these years of fishing and getting together. And it still means a lot when one of us wins. You know, when Dave won his tournament or Pete wins or you win, it's exciting for me, man, you know. And it's been a big deal, you know, over the years, 20 years plus, whatever, we've been fishing together and been friends, and it's just a good deal. But back in the day, man, that was, I can't even believe the way things ran. We were such a motley bunch, dude. You know, it was like, it was like a joke almost, but we got the job done, and I think that's all that mattered, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I still, it's funny you said something too, because I still remember being at some of those invitationals early on, and we were always like the outcast. Just because when the sheet was printed out, you know, there'd be 400 names on that sheet. Well, there was only the five, six, seven names from Jersey.
Yeah.
And, like, they were, you know, once they saw that you were from Jersey, you're like, oh, no. Like, dudes were, like, writing you off instantly, you know? They were, like, from the armpit of America. You know, everybody's like hoping they don't draw us because we're from the
– I'll tell you a funny story. We were fishing the St. John's, and me and you were fishing up in the river, dude. I don't know if you remember this, man. And we came drifting by Jim Bitter, and you stopped, like, in front of him, and I got right behind him. And
he started
saying about Jersey guys, yada, yada, you know, and because we had him sandwiched, and he couldn't even cast hardly, dude, you know.
We're from Jersey, and we know how to be an asshole.
Yeah, dude, it was fun.
His last name's Bitter, and he was a bitter dude. I can tell you that,
there
man.
No doubt about
many
that,
levels.
Man.
Super bitter. Mark, you got any good ones? Give us a good story from back in the day. Anything you remember sticks out?
I remember, we had like a lot of good times. Remember one time I took you guys when we went down to Kissimmee, took you guys down to Overstreets.
Oh, yeah.
My mom jumped out of the truck and said, where the hell are we at? Like 5-6 miles. There's all these big Brahma bulls. It's like, where are we at? Dude, the ramp's right here down this road. Okay, we got back there. I remember that was a good time. But I remember, I think we're down in Georgia, and I think we had a flat tire. We had to fix something on your rig.
Yeah.
And you cut your hands. And it was like all greased up. And we had to get going. And it's like, dude, it was bad. And the only thing I could think of, you know, I didn't do it on purpose, but I had that, you know, the hand sanitizer. I said, well, Mike, that's got alcohol. Put that on there.
Oh, yeah.
Smoked them.
Dude, all that scream that came out of him.
Oh, I know, dude.
I'm like, dude, I'm so sorry. It was just so hilarious. It just sticks out.
That fucking sand crab sent him to the emergency room, and his wife had to drag him off the beach like he was in Iwo Jima.
Iwo Jima. Oh, my God. Now, the great thing about us traveling together, though, is we did – there was this like a good bond of when somebody got in trouble or somebody got down.
Yeah.
There was always someone there to help you. Like Bob, I remember, had – You had a boat go down up in the Great Lakes, up at Thousand Islands. Yeah, I remember, like, something would happen, and you always had a lifeline.
Yeah.
Which was nice.
Because there was no cell phones. We had to travel in flocks.
You had to travel in flocks.
Pretty much.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, I sank my boat up there, man. It took 7 of us, remember, to get it on a trailer. It was like a miracle, dude, because it washed up on a shore. By the only ramp within 100 miles. Dude.
Wow.
It was like insane, man. And it was laying on its side, man. All my tackle, you know, my plastic boxes, like aquariums, dude, they're all full of water. And then the next day I had a fish too, man, you know. So we drug it up on the trailer. And you're right, man, because, you know, it'd probably still be there if I was by myself, you know. I just left it there, dude, you know. But everybody was always there to help. You're right.
I wish that, like, the younger generation could experience – fishing world the way we did.
Yeah.
So they could appreciate an old Federation warrior like this actually going out on one of the hardest bodies of water with those hammers that are out there and actually winning.
Yeah.
Beating the Cowans, the Centaurs, the Rizzes of the world.
Yeah.
You know, and just and smashing them. You know?
Yeah. I think a lot of times young anglers look at the sport and they're very jaded because they think, you know, they're going to get into it, and then they're going to just get to that top level.
Yeah,
you know?
It's easy.
Yeah, it's easy. You know, driving a $100,000 rig, staying at the best hotels, and they forget about all that grind that we did. You know, all those years of staying in the rat hotels, the cabins that were – dude, think about some of the cabins we stayed at. The dilapidated cabins, you know, no air, no – like all that grind – but here's the thing. You know, you look at that, and those guys are like, oh, I don't want to do that. It's too much. Dude, they were some of the best moments of my life.
Yeah.
Dude, when you think about it, right? They weren't glorious. But think, Dave, think back to those moments. Weren't they the best? They were the best.
Without a doubt. You know, you reminded me of a time I was traveling with Bob and Ted, and we stopped in Anderson, South Carolina. And we stopped in the wrong part of town. We should not have stopped there. And Teddy slept in a chair by the window all night long, looking out, watching our boats.
The watchman.
Yeah.
Happened, you know, but I mean, you know, lots of those places that we stayed in, whether it was Champlain or whether it was down in Okeechobee, you know, I mean, they weren't the best, but it was what we could afford. And we certainly made the best of it, you know. You know, you were saying something earlier about John Erickson, and I'll never forget him down in Okeechobee. you know, talking about stories. He one day when we were doing the invitationals, he got hooked up with a person who was going to go through a sex change operation, and happened to have very long hair, just like John. John had it down the middle of his back. John came back. He was in a panic, you know. The guy's a good fisherman here, you know. And you got a good draw. He goes, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to talk about all day? I said, well, you can start with hair care products.
Hey, Dave, remember that time when we were down at that St. John's, man? I think we were down there, and I got shot at going in at a gas station. Remember that time?
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Holy
shit. The guy behind the counter, man, he didn't even bat an eye. Like a bullet comes ripping through the door as I'm walking in the place. Mance is laying face down in the parking lot, and the guy's like, I said, dude, are you going to call the cops or anything? He's like, I think I had an argument with the guy over selling beer on a Sunday. Yeah, God, it's God. Remember? Yeah. They didn't call the cops or nothing.
I had my off duty out behind the truck, for God's sake. But yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah,
but Dave, that was back before National Carry, dude. Like, that's back when we used to smuggle our guns just like any other bad guy, dude. There was no National Carry back then.
Yeah, but we weren't fools, Dave.
I know that, dude. I remember, like, going down to Florida to see my mom, coming back. When I would get halfway through the Delaware Memorial Bridge, it was like a sigh of relief because I knew I was street legal, you know what I mean, dude?
Yeah. You just prayed if somebody you ran into somebody that they understood.
At the bottom of the bridge on the Jersey side, and you smoked.
Yeah.
Oh man.
I remember Bob coming out. I'm like waiting for more shots to come, and I remember him coming out, and I'm like, dude, let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Some of the experiences from all those years is crazy, man.
You think back, and it's like you said, you had no internet. I don't even know how we found our places. We all found houses all over the place.
Yeah.
Like you said, everybody helped out cooking. And,
yeah.
You know, I remember the one trip when we were all down Hartwell. I don't know if you remember that. It was all of our first time down there, Bob's and yours and Dave and Pete. And we all come in and went, dude, you're all fishing for second. All those cuts, all the main lake cuts were loaded with these slobs. We've seen them everywhere. So we're like all excited because, like, dude, we're going to kick their asses. We all go back the next day. We all come in sulking, hanging our heads. Where'd they go?
Yeah.
We're like, they moved. Yeah. Where the hell they moved? What? They moved?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Big wolf packs of them.
Yeah, and they moved way out to them damn, you know, way out. I mean, you learned how to fish it since then, but I'll never forget that. It's like, wow. That was pretty.
Because we had nothing. We have nothing like that up here where they move like that.
There were no reservoirs like that.
Not of that size where they act like that.
We didn't have the blueback herring schools like they had. We long points, spotted bass, shoal bass. What the hell were they?
Flooded timber.
Flooded timber. Yeah, it was all new. You know.
One of the things that you know Mike brought up a good point is that you know guys today, the younger guys, they just want to get right into fishing opens or whatever the case may be. But you know, none of us skipped any steps. You know, we started at the club level, the federation, and then went to fishing invitationals and so forth, man. So it was like a progression. You know what I mean? Where guys today, and I think this the information that's on the internet, guys can get better, faster, obviously, with the amount of, you know, information that's on the internet. But I think it's important to go through those grinding years of fishing in a federation or club tournaments and then move up to regional tournaments, maybe like the opens or whatever, because a lot of guys, they just get in there, but they're not really competing, in my opinion. But, you know, it's back then we kind of went through the steps, you know, just part of the process.
Oh, the hard way. You had to know how to triangulate.
Yeah.
No GPS. Yep.
Dropping buoys, man.
Marker buoys. Dropping bombs.
Then it got to the point where you paint them black.
Yeah.
So nobody knew you were fishing a buoy or take a bottle. Put a clear bottle out there that's floating on the water so nobody know what you're actually fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Bob, John McGraw and I were talking the other day about you, and we were saying that, is it true, like, in your opinion, that the BFL All-American back when you made it all those times was better than any event you had ever been in?
Yeah, and the other reason why I say that, you know, I fished a couple classics in the All-American, and, you know, bass, you know, when you fish a bass event, man, there's a lot of egos there, man. And it's bass has, you know, some guys they're focused on. And, you know, when you fish the All-American, everybody's at the same level. There's no egos there, you know, and it's still a big event, you know. But in the All-American, they're focused more on all the anglers, man. Nobody's getting any extra press, man, because everybody's the same. You know, everybody made it out of 50,000 guys to fish the All-American. And I enjoyed that because I'm not, you know, you guys who know me, you know, I'm loud and obnoxious, but that's not how I am usually around people. I'm quiet. I'm like Mark. I just do my thing fishing, you know, and I don't want to, you know, I'm not looking for the attention of it. I just love to fish and fish tournaments, you know. Yeah. But, you know, I thought the All-American was just, it was just a better event. That's just my opinion. A lot of people got an uproar over it, but, you know, that's just, like I said, it's my opinion.
Yeah. That's the one regret of my career is that I never made an All-American, you know, I really, really tried hard over the years. You know, I've made a lot of the, what is it? The divisional or regional?
Regional.
I guess it was. I made a lot of regionals,
but
then I can never get past it.
I was fortunate in that 1 year to make it.
Yeah.
That make the All-American and, I wish they would have changed the dead fish penalty size back
then. What year was that, dude?
2004.
I thought it was three or four.
I made the All-American and National Championship the same year.
I remember seeing your name just because it was the only New Jersey name on there, dude.
Yeah, like, I lost that tournament because of a dead fish penalty.
Wow.
Where was that tournament at, Mark? Where was that?
Lake Hamilton in Arkansas, right near, what's that, Ochsotol.
I fished the Connecticut River, and it's kind of funny because, like, you know, people were saying because I'm from the Northeast, I never fished a place in my life, dude. You know what I mean? I just went out there, and I had a good tournament. I think I finished fifth or something overall, but, you know, I never saw the place. But it was a really good event, man. I liked it.
Oh, I thought the All-America. That's what I tell her. I don't know why that, like, the whole TV, all that split, where everybody's got their opinions, but I thought the All-American, it was a treat. They make you feel like you're, you know, like you said, you had to earn it. You got to come through, fish a lot of events.
Yeah.
It's real hard to get to. I went fortunate. I fished a lake I never fished for to get there, Lake Chautauqua.
Yeah.
I never, luckily I, you know, we all do our due diligence and reach out to guys you might know. And you guys all know Marcel Venstre.
Oh, yeah.
That's
Cantaloupe. Marcel.
Yes. Marcel.
Sweet Marcel.
What a
great dude. And Marcel clued me in on a little stretch. He goes, I don't know. He says, it's just one spot that, you know, it's not near the community holes. You might want to try it. And he said, you might see somebody else there. He says, because I shared it with somebody else. And I said, well, I appreciate the start. Yeah. And I got the start. And next thing you know, dude, I'm catching 20-pound bags of smallmouth going,
oh my God.
Wow. It's like, I made it? It's like, yeah. And got to that All-American and, it was like Bob said, everybody gets treated the same.
Yeah.
It was a good event. You know, it was the people watching, you young kids, you don't know, but remember the wide world of sports, right? Kurt Gowdy, the agony defeat and the thrill of victory. Well, I got to experience it firsthand, and it was, you know, and of course, then when I went on to the national championship right after, because they were back to back, I went from Arkansas right to Oklahoma, and I went from Gin Clear fishing trick worms around docks, wacky rig to water you couldn't see your fingernails when you stuck it in the water. It was so muddy. And I was, my head wasn't into that because I was, you know, pouting. But that experience is something that of a lifetime that helps you, like I said, it makes to this day, yesterday's win with my daughter was very, very special, but also the fact just to win again, it's
hard to win.
It's hard to win. And
it's hard to win.
And it'll never get old.
Yeah.
Now I just want to win again. So now
I'm
like, I'm, you know, like, I hope I can go up Erie and do well.
I like what you said about her having the trophy when you're long and gone.
Yeah.
That's forever, dude.
That's forever.
That's rad.
I mean, you guys all know if you have family, houses or anything like that, dude, money's just, I mean.
That goes away, but that trophy's there forever.
Forever. Yeah.
That's fucking rad.
Yeah.
I love that, man.
That's the most, Michelle will tell you, I mean, I'm blessed when people come to my garage. I mean, I got my share, and it's hard work. A lot of first losers. You know, I critique my win yesterday.
Yeah.
I was out in the garage this morning critiquing what I did. I was like, you know, I should have done this. You know, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
Oh, yeah, you do that. And it's funny because it doesn't matter. You know, you won. But
I should have done this. Yeah. I could have been, you know, I shouldn't have missed those three. Yeah. I should have.
Hey, let's digress for a moment here. All right. Let's talk about proud moments amongst all of us. All right. How many people, Mark, have made the All-American and the National? When you think about it, all the people that have fished throughout the years.
Yeah.
Not very many.
No.
Right?
No.
So I made it. I made the National.
Bob's made the National. He's made the Classic twice. He's made the All-American. All right. His brother made the Classic. Right. Mike, Angler of the Year, BASS, the Classic, right? And I was fortunate enough to win an Open.
Yep.
Just think what we've as a group, what we've accomplished, we have to be proud of.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's
very cool.
And that's why I think, you know, I feel, you know, honored to be here tonight and to be able to talk to you guys, because everybody, when one of us win, you're really happy, honestly. You know, of course, we all want to win.
Yeah.
But when one of your buddies win, it's like, dude, because you know the effort that it takes and that you put in to get there.
Yeah. So for the younger people watching, I'm going to ask a question to the room, and that includes our guests. I saw a meme, and it was about an old special operator, and it said, fear the old man that does a job where young men die, right? And in this room, we have a ton of dudes that at elder ages are successful. I'm going to start with you, Mansu, first. The younger generation, the way they're coming up now with the way things are sculpted, way different than when we came up, what would be your best piece of advice for young anglers watching right now to get wise to the game?
It's a good question.
Oh, man, that's...
Dave, you win a prize tonight.
Dave, send in your info.
Can I have that that frog up there with the hook sticking straight out? They'll catch every blade of grass.
You can have that frog. That's your prize tonight.
And, You know, unfortunately, the whole game has changed. Now, are we talking about fishing? Are we talking about, you know, the whole
competitive angling, Dave? Mike gets swarmed, and I watched it myself, and I'm on the IM board. Gets swarmed with young, aspiring anglers. What would be your advice to them to gain the knowledge, to gain the street knowledge, you know, the secret police shit to move forward?
Well, first off, you have to be successful in the water. There's no doubt about it. And there's no substitute for time on the water. I don't care what you want to look at, learn. You know, I mean, obviously there's a million, you know, there's Bass University things that are going to shorten your learning curve and whatnot. But until you apply those things and actually experience them, you know, you're missing out. Yeah. You have to.
Yeah.
You just can't be done on the computer, you know. And then on the other end of it, you know, unfortunately, you know, the whole social media thing has changed. You know, the corporations and whatnot, you know, you're hurting yourself by putting those free stickers on everything, you know, and young kids don't understand that. You know, you got to, you know, to make a living out of this thing now has become actually more difficult now than ever before, because there are so many people trying to do it.
Yeah.
So. You know, it's easy to cut the nose off despite the face here by thinking that you're going to get ahead by doing things for free. And there's always somebody in line that wants to do the same thing, you know, is willing to do the same thing. But as far as the fishing goes, dude, there, you know, like right now I'm in Del Rio, Texas at Kirk Doves Pro Bass Camp. And, you know, we've got 34 kids here right now that just soak up everything that we can possibly give them while they're out on the water.
That's awesome.
They're out 8 hours, and, you know, you're teaching them from soup to nuts, trying to teach them from soup to nuts. And a lot of them think they know something, you know, but then when they see it applied, it's like you see the light bulb, you know.
So, Dave, it's just like any other sport or any other craft, training, right? Get yourself immersed.
Listen, you're not going to be successful unless you work at it. I don't care what you have to work at it, whether it's a sport, whether it's, you know, books, education, whatever. You just can't sit by and do nothing. You've got to work at it. It's practice, practice, practice. You think Tom Brady won 7 Super Bowls by just sitting there looking at a computer? No, he's out on the field doing the work. You've got to do the work. You know, Mike's a classic example. Mark, who spent more time on the water amongst all of us?
Mike was dark to dark.
Beyond.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
There were nights where we didn't think he was ever going to come back.
I used to call him the Pizza Eater because he used to have that little freezer full of Tombstone pizzas.
That's right, Pizza Eater. I was proud of that nickname.
Yeah, you were.
I love that nickname.
I remember the first time we stayed in a room together, you got all his shit out, right? Retied every single lure on every single rod. And I'm just watching him. I already ate. I'm sitting there. And then he gets his maps out. And I'll never forget this. Talk about the funny stories. He goes to the freezer. He puts his mac and cheese in. Turns around. Boom. Right on the floor. Oh. Gets his pizza. Got his pizza. You're pissed that you lost your mac and cheese. So he just ate a pizza. He sat on the bed. I said, look over at him. Actually, no, he's out. Dude, he's sleeping. He's dead cold. Next time when he woke up. Because he got up. It was probably 4:35 o'clock in the morning. You got up, got your shower, got all your shit out. You went. I'm like, it's still dark out. I'm like, you go get him, brother. So you go get him. And we're all like that, right? It's like, damn, got to hand it to you. I mean, like Dave was just saying, the effort and the time, you have to, you know, everybody picks their routine. But one thing that I would add to like these young guys getting into the sport, and you know, Bass University, obviously one of the greatest tools out there. But how I learned how to become successful in the sport was an individual told me one time, to be successful in a business, you want to look at who are the people that are already successful in that business.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking the Sticks back in the day. You guys remember Tom LaVictory Sr.?
Oh, yeah.
We all know Eddie Cowan. Those two guys there, it's like you got to every tournament, you were sick and tired of hearing them win.
Yeah.
But you know what they were really good at? Flipping.
Yeah.
They always had them big sticks. Flipping stick. I started fishing with spinning rods. I own two now. But I started out, I didn't know nothing really about that technique. Yeah. I had to throw a jig.
Yeah.
I didn't know that technique. So what I figured for me to be successful in this sport, to compete against those types of guys, I need to learn how to flip.
Right.
So you find out. Unfortunately, if someone tried to pattern himself after someone like yourself, you're very versatile. You're good at a lot of things, but that's what guys got to look at. You got to pick a model.
Yeah.
A business model, I guess you would call
it.
To follow.
Yeah.
To become successful. So you could start with Bass U. You could sign up for these tournaments. Go as co-anglers.
Yeah.
That's a good way to learn. That's what I did.
I agree with the co-angler.
And you're going to learn two things as a co-angler. You're going to need to learn one, what to do. You're going to learn a lot of things not to do.
Yeah.
Because you'll draw guys that – my biggest thing that I always see you guys do, they run up on a spot and they sit down on top of it, and literally blow it out. Now, in some lakes and some certain situations, it's a good thing. You stirred the fish up.
Yeah.
But when I was fishing as a co-angler, I ain't never seen anybody catch a fish, and I started questioning my partners, like, do you ever catch a fish when you do this?
Yeah.
And they're just like, well, yeah, sometimes. I'm like, okay, sometimes. Well, that – So,
yeah.
But what you said is very important for you young guys watching in terms of being a co-angler. Lower your expectations about going out and winning.
Yep.
But accept what not to do. That is so crucial because you will find yourself in those what not to do situations more so than you'll ever find yourself in the fish are just flying into the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And you will recognize them by living through them versus doing it on the front of the boat at a higher cost.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the biggest key. You know, one of the best co-anglers around that I knew that I learned a lot from was a guy I hooked you up with, Mitch Pearson.
Mitch is awesome. Hell, yeah.
Yep.
And a stick.
Like, yes. Yeah.
Should catch them.
Yep.
Catch them.
And Mary told me a story one time. He went on Thousand Islands as a co-angler. Gets drawn with a guy runs out between the two islands, Wolf Island and that other little island, Grenadier, I think it is.
Yeah.
And he goes, we pull up to the spot, the guy pulls out one rod, and he's got a 10-inch Berkeley Power Worm on. He goes, I knew right then and there, this ain't going to work. And I just never forget that because I'm like, well, did he catch anyone? No. He goes, but I learned one thing. That's one time, sorry, about learning.
Don't,
he goes, don't use a 10-inch Berkeley Power Worm in jig clear water when you're fishing for smallmouth. I mean, it might work. But that's, you know, getting back to, you know, for the young guys to want to get in the sport, anybody wants to get in the sport, look for who's the most successful.
Yeah.
What is their strength? That, or what did they win a tournament on?
Because,
you know, sometimes you'll win on a chatterbait, you'll win on a finesse worm, spinner. There's a lot of different things everybody wins on. So that's what, you know, I would suggest to anybody, if you see like a Mike Iaconelli that's successful or these new guys coming up, what are they doing?
Right.
Seems like drop shot, a lot of finesse is coming back into play.
Yeah.
Because I remember when we first came into the game, I got in a game like Lake of Pack on Greenwood.
Slider head.
Well, all those guys
up north. Power worm, 4-inch.
Yeah, everybody was finesse fishing.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, well, why can't I throw a big spinnerbait or why can't you throw a jig? And, well, that did work.
Yeah.
But the finessing was the deal back then, and that then you go through the trend, and it seems like now everything, maybe it's the bodies of water.
Yeah.
You know, for the big smallmouth everybody's chasing that you – you know, like we're talking earlier, like 4-pound test. So I'm hoping, like Erie, I hope they're not that finicky because, dude, I'm old school. I start with, I'm not going, well, let me try 8-pound, 7, 6, 4, 5. Hell with that. If they ain't eating what I'm throwing, I'm going to try.
I'm stuck in that line problem right now, and I'm trying to get out of it. But hey, Bob, I want to ask you, and I know you're going to be a lot more coarse and a lot less finesse than these guys are, but if you had a son that just all of a sudden wanted to get into this. Now, for those of you listening, younger guys, the way Bob made the classic was under the hardest circumstances that existed.
Yeah.
There's nothing in place right now that's harder than the way Bob made, correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I made it once through the pro division and then once through the federation. And actually, Mike did the same thing because, and this is I wanted to ask Mike, I know he felt like crap after this, but Mike had a chance to qualify. It was the most amazing thing that probably feat that I've seen anybody do was that he got disqualified from a tournament by Jim Bitter, right? And an invitational, and they took you out of the classic contention.
Yeah.
And then you turned right around and won a national championship to make it, dude. I mean, you went from like the lowest low to the highest high, dude, like overnight. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So,
and then got a podcast and talk shit on Jim Bitter for the last 20 years.
All these years later.
What's up, Jim?
Hey, you heard me say it comes full circle. It all came full circle
tonight.
What's
up, Jim?
In your face.
In your face, Jim Bitter.
You should have held on to that fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't bounce fish off your dashboard.
Yeah, see, this is what happens when you pay attention.
Should have held on to that fish.
You never measure a fish on top of the gunwale.
Yes.
On the floor.
Let me measure this fish under the boat. How will this work out?
Yeah. You know, well, that's what I was. He probably had to scale the size. Yeah.
John McGraw never even measures the fish at all. He just puts it in the live well.
Just assumes that his dumb partner don't reach it.
Fucking try to weigh in a 10-incher on the flats. Who cares?
It looked 15.
It looked 15. 10, 15.
No, it looked 12. I was like, John, where's your scale? It's 12. And we threw it in. Bob, go ahead, Bob. For the younger guys watching, Mike has a ton of young guys that want to hear from a wizard like yourself. Go ahead.
You know, I just think, like, you guys are right. There's no substitute for time on the water. And when we were fishing coming up, it was even more important because we didn't have the internet or anything like that. The only way you learned a place was by going out there and fishing all the time. But, you know, I work on my, you know, like instincts fishing, like, you know, coming up from the federation level. I used to keep a log of the weather before I went fishing, during the time I went fishing, after the time I went fishing, all the time. Just because I think there's more to fishing than just what you're casting or where you're throwing it. There's going to be decisions you're going to have to make during the tournament days. Or where you're going to start, or when you get into multi-day tournaments, you know, where you're going to go the second day or the third day, or when you're going to leave your fish. There's so many decisions you have to work on. And, you know, for young guys, they got to spend time on the water and, you know, maybe with, you know, anglers that are seasoned already or better than them. And, you know, just remember that, you know, one day they're going to be in charge of making their own decisions out there on the water, and being able to sense the fish is like super important, man. I mean, everybody talks about what you throw or where you throw it, but you know, you have to spend time on the water constantly just to get a sense of what the fish are doing and go to different places. Don't go to the same pond all the time. you know, go to a tidal river one day, go to a natural lake one time, go to a place you can deep crank or flip jigs or whatever the case may be to expand your game so you get a good knowledge, different watercolors. You know, here in the Northeast, we don't really get, you know, a chance to expand, you know, dirty water or, you know, places like that. There are a few, but you know, like I said, there's more to it than just going out there and, you know, what you're throwing or what kind of baits. And you got to work on, you know, that mental part of the game and just get a sense to what the fish are doing during that, you know, during the tournament or going into the next day. And I'll tell you, man, I've been successful probably, you know, maybe 50% of my tournament days are fishing places I've never even practiced on.
Just Bob, in terms of your, weather, when you used to document your weather and record your weather, how did you get as deep as like barometric pressure and stuff like that, or what?
No, I never
what
got
did you document?
Barometric. Yeah, I never got into the barometric pressure, but I got, you know, was it a front, you know, high pressure, you know, what kind of day was it, you know, weather, temperature, the whole nine yards. And I'll tell you, man, you can get a great sense of what the fish are doing just by the water temperature, man, or the fronts, especially like in the spring, the fall, certain places you go to. I mean, the summertime is the summertime. The fish really are going to be doing what they're doing, but you know, the spring and the fall are super important, man, when that water temperature changes. And, you know, I'll give you an example. Like, I know when I go to Kerr to fish, you know, back in the day, I used to throw top water there. I knew it was good until the water got like to 70 degrees. After that, it was, you know, the fish move into the creeks and, you know, it's a different kind of game. But, it, you know, it, just the little details, and a lot of times guys overlook that, but that puts you ahead of everybody, in my opinion. You know, guys are caught up on the exact baits they're throwing. But on any tournament day, fish are getting caught on 50, 100 different baits. You know, it's not that important. It's, you know, a lot of times what wins tournaments, and Mike knows this more than anybody, man. You got to be, you know, man, you're going to make some tough decisions, and Mark knows this. All Dave knows this. You know, those decisions make you or break you during the tournaments, man. And you got to keep repetitively doing it until it comes natural and you get a better idea of what you need to do during a tournament to be successful. And it doesn't always work out. Tournament fishing is one of the roughest things you'll ever do, you know.
Yeah.
And don't let the bad days, like Mark won, a perfect example. Mark won yesterday. He's at the highest high. Me and Brian went out there and it's had the worst day of our lives yesterday.
just another day to me, Bob.
Yeah, you just go out and, you know, so what? You had a bad day. It's just how
I'm
it is.
Used to it, dude. Bob, the disappointment is kind of, I'm just so used to it.
Yeah.
Bob, I had another question for you, and we've talked about this on past Ike Lives when you were on here. And for those that have never seen those, new viewers to the show, you're an avid hunter. You're a successful avid hunter for deer. How would you equate your pattern movement in terms of the weather? Could you equate like your deer patterns as well as the bass patterns? Is that something you could articulate?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, you know, for me, obviously, deer hunting, weather has a lot to do with deer movement, just like the bass. It's pretty much the same exact thing. But deer do certain things. You know, bass have the spawn, deer have the rut, you know, and there's certain times of the year that they're moving. And I tell all the guys out there hunting, man, you know, the best time, everybody wants to hunt during the rut, but the best time to hunt is actually, for me, the last week of October. But the weather patterns and deer hunting, man, I mean, you know, you could definitely, you know, the better days are when it's colder, high pressure, deer tend to move earlier, move more, you know, and it's kind of the opposite with bass fishing. You know, bass, they don't want cold fronts moving in and stuff like that. They want stable conditions, man. But you know, whitetails are very cover oriented, so are bass. There's a lot of things that you could put together with doing both. And the other thing, you know, about deer hunting that's so important is it puts you outdoors. You know, you're in the woods, you're looking at, you know, nature, and you can kind of get a sense of what's going on. And the same things happen with fishing. You know, you could look at certain things and, you know, you pull into a pocket and see a bunch of birds diving down, it catches your attention, you know, or whatever the case may be. But, you know, it's all about, you know, getting out in nature and seeing what's going on. And you could definitely learn something deer hunting. And Mark's a deer hunter too. And so is Mr. Mansu there. But, you know, it's a good thing to get you tuned in to. It's a different kind of creature, but it's all the same to me.
Yeah. I tell you this. I like to put Bob on the spot here, and I want to hear from Mark and Dave about this. Bob is one of the best natural fishermen I've ever seen. And I've been around them all, man.
I've never seen anyone that has better natural instincts than Bob. It's amazing. And, dude, he could have a brown paper bag full of lures, two rods, and you listen to the fish better than anybody I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Why is that? Dave, Officer Mansu, why is Bob so good at listening to the fish?
Well, so, because he's probably got the same size brain as one.
He desires him sexually. That's what I was thinking.
Wow. Sex with bass. Yeah.
But the reality of it is, you're exactly right. I can't tell you how many times we would be practicing for a tournament, and we would have a great practice, okay? Put the boat in the water tournament day. We're about ready to take off, and he'd look at me and go, dude, we're scrapping everything. And I'd say, what? And to me, nothing had changed. The environment was exactly the same, all right? But Bob would recognize one minor change that I did not.
Yeah.
And it ain't going to work today. We're doing something else.
Yeah.
And off we'd go. And we'd be successful. You know, the guy just friggin' amazed me at how he could read that environment and know that there was the slightest of changes. And you only get that by spending time on the water.
Yeah.
And starting the outdoors, you know.
Yeah.
But over time, I mean, you recognize that, hey, you know what it's like. You know, you got a bright sunny day, and then all of a sudden here come the clouds. You know, what do? You know, you got a little bit of wind. You make a change. The environment, we work in a fluid environment, and you have to be fluid with it.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion, there's nobody better at it than Soli.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen it. Mark, I know you've seen it, him at work. It's just amazing.
Well, I think we're talking about a little bit. It's Bob's attitude.
Yeah.
You know, his attitude towards it's like he knows what he knows and he trusts his instincts.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all got this little voice in our head. It's part of your instincts. And sometimes, you know, Bob doesn't second guess himself. It's like, dude, it ain't working. Why are you doing it?
Yeah.
You know, he's not insane. That's insanity, right? Keep doing it. Like, I'm going to make them eat them. They're going to eat it.
Yeah.
You know, like throwing a chatterbait for 6 hours and you ain't got a bite.
Yeah.
No, they're going to. Right?
Yeah. Guilty.
I know they're going to bite it. I'm going to win if they bite. But
guilty yesterday.
I got news for you. That's what I've taught myself the past couple of years, because down on the flats, a power fisherman dominated down there. But then all of a sudden they get real, you know, finicky and stuff. And, you know, I think it was the first BFL this year that I fished. Dude. They bite the chatterbait.
Yeah.
I don't care what you say. Well, at the end of the tournament, I would say, well, they bite the chatterbait, but they didn't bite it today.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I talked to Keith Cowan. Keith said the same thing. Dude, I did the same thing. I'm like, hey, you only need 5 bites.
Yeah.
But a guy like Bob, he'd be like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Gave it 20 minutes. It ain't working. Do something else. And I believe it's all in the positive attitude.
Yeah.
In other words, there's a lot of people you could talk them out of stuff.
Yeah.
You're not talking solely out.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, not a chance.
Call it bullheaded. It's not being bullheaded. It's just having, you know, experience on the water. I mean, I feel I'm a lot like him in that way. You know, when I make, you know, I make up my mind. That's it.
Trust in the voice. I trust in your instincts.
Trust it. Yep. How many times you're fishing and all of a sudden, you know, maybe you're catching them, let's say, on a Senko. And, you know, you got your spinnerbait, you all your stuff on there. And you just kind of, you know what? Well, that looks like I should throw a spinnerbait.
Yeah.
You just put it down, you pick it up, make the catch, whack. You're like, and then you put it down and you pick up what you're doing. I've had many partners like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I said, well, that fish, that was a spinnerbait fish.
Yeah.
You're not going to keep throwing it? No, dude, they don't want the spinnerbait. That fish did. I don't know why. It's just, but yeah, the bright ideas. And, you know, I guess it's from coming to a young kid. That's all my mom and dad told me. Boy, you got a lot of bright ideas, don't you, boy? I was like, yeah, I got a lot of bright ideas. And you learn to follow them and trust them.
Trust your instinct.
Trust them. And that's, I believe, that's all goes back into that mental game.
Right.
You know, just because you see a Mike Iaconelli over there throwing a chatterbait. Well, Bob sees you doing it, and he ain't catching one, and he's not going to throw because you are.
Right.
He's going to throw exactly what he believes he's going to throw. And I would do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things that's important, and I know Mike is really good at doing this, When you go into a tournament day, especially, you know, a lot of guys are so locked into what they did in practice, what they threw in practice. And so the best, you know, thing to do is, you know, when you start fishing, whatever you're fishing, say you're fishing docks or points or whatever it is, to go through a progression of lures, because maybe the mood of the fish have changed. Maybe you caught them on a spinnerbait during practice. So a lot of guys will go fish that point with a spinnerbait, you know, during the tournament. They don't get bit on it. And some other guy will say, well, you know, dude, I was dragging a jig on the same point. And I weighed 25 pounds.
Yep.
You know, so like, you know, guys are so caught up in doing exactly what they did in practice that they don't go through any kind of progression during a tournament.
Yeah.
Great point, Bob.
You know, a lot of guys, they just kind of, you know, and that you could easily get caught up in that even during a tournament day, right? In the morning, you caught them on a spinnerbait, throwing it all day, and you don't get a bite after, you know, 15, 20 minutes, the bell should go off saying something's wrong or something changed, you know, and, you know, what else should I be throwing, or maybe the fish moved or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So Mike, do you remember a few years back on Rayburn, Bob just made a great point, you know, and it's not just a, you know, the progression could also be when you're catching fish. But a few years ago, we were fishing on Rayburn, and I was flipping a half-ounce baby D-bomb into bushes, and we were catching 2.5 to 3 pounders.
Yeah.
And you asked me, have you gone to a three-quarter? And we were only flipping in two to 2.5 feet of water.
Yeah.
And I said, no, hadn't thought about it. I mean, we're only in 2.5 feet of water.
Yeah.
And you put that three-quarter, and that size went from 2.5 to 3.5 and 4.
Yeah.
So those progressions and making those changes, even when you're catching fish, can make them as well.
Yeah.
And that's something you only learn when you're on the water.
Yeah. It's hard because you never want to be satisfied. Even when you're catching them, you want to, is there something that can catch them a little better?
Yeah.
You know, is it just a little bigger, a little smaller, heavier weight, lighter weight? You know, you're always, the minute you get satisfied as an angler, you're screwed.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can never, 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 ever be satisfied.
No,
you know?
I know I'm never.
Yeah.
Even when, like I said, I was critiquing my performance
this morning. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah. I'm like, it's a good critique.
Well,
that's so awesome, man.
Here's something I won't critique. I won't critique the fact that I got to grow up and come up fishing with some of the best guys in the state of New Jersey. It was unbelievable back then. It's unbelievable now. This does feel like it's come full circle. What an awesome night for me to sit here with Dave and Bob and Mark, you, with Brian DeCarpenter and Dave Brodzik, who I've fished with since I was 10, 11 fucking years old.
Nice.
What an unbelievable night this has been for me. Man,
I appreciate being invited.
I'm so proud to know all you guys. I can tell you I'm the fisherman I am today because of everybody in this room. All of you. Dave Brodzik, Brian DeCarpenter included. So
appreciate
thank
it.
You guys. Thank you guys. It's awesome. It's awesome.
I think we all are.
What's that saying? It takes a village to raise an idiot?
Yeah.
Isn't that how it goes?
It takes a village to raise an idiot. That's right.
Something like that. Go ahead.
Yeah.
It's been a great experience throughout the entire our entire careers together, and you know the one thing that we continue to do is number one be friends, and number two keep rooting for each other, and that's pretty awesome after 30 years.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Dave and Bob, I appreciate you guys coming on, and I know it made this show special.
It did.
I know Mark appreciated it, too. So I thank you guys for coming on.
That was fun, awesome. Man.
That was super fun. Great stories. Nice. And if you guys want macaroni and cheese and Elio's pizza, come to the house.
All right.
How about Arby's?
And Arby's, yes.
Oh, yeah. Andy Mansu on the message board said, I forget what she said.
She said she wants me to come back to the house.
No, Bob was a great furniture mover.
Yeah, that was terrific, man.
All right, guys, good night. Thanks for coming on.
All right, take care, man. Thanks.
See you
later, guys.
Later, Bob. Later, Dave.
Dude, that was awesome. Yeah. Wasn't that awesome?
That was
awesome, it was.
Bro. Oh, that was so awesome.
Yeah, it brought back some good memories.
Yeah.
Yep, they was. Yeah.
Good sticks, too.
I wonder how much of the younger, like, when we were coming up, like, I wonder how much of the younger generation appreciates, like, a Bob Soley.
Yeah.
Do they even know of his accolades and how hard it was to get to that?
I know.
I would say for those of you watching that want to be this, be what Mike is, you need to learn that. You need to understand that. I think that's a huge component, understanding how hard it was to get to where those guys got to.
Yeah. You gotta be willing to put the work in. You know, and I think anybody that's successful, you know, you have to put the work in. But the great thing is if you're passionate about fishing, you know, like we talked about, like, dude, I think about it every day. Like, there's not a day that goes past that I don't think about it. I jumped out in the kayak today for, like, I only had a little 30-minute window. Went out. I just love to do it. You know what I mean? So when you can combine those two, you know, if you have that passion, then that works a lot easier.
Yeah,
you know?
The passion, the desire. It's like, you know, you just set goals for yourself in life, you know, and don't let anybody tell you, you know, you can't.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes a lot of times, a lot of people, I mean, you had – you know, a nice back and behind you, you know, a family is, you need certain people behind you. When, so when you have those, you know, cause it's a lot of effort. And when we all started out, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
No, yeah. I was one of them. I was like, what'd you get your degree in, dude? Like, what are you doing? You need to go exercise that degree.
Yeah. And he did.
No, but I mean, like, not fishing, bro. You need to be doing something else. Oh, so I was one of them ones dude, what are you crazy?
Yeah. But it's, but it was all worth it. I mean, it's there's struggles. It is what it is. But you just got to have that desire, the passion, and be prepared to not catch them.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Roller coaster.
Because something happened. That's all. It's just, it'll all work out if you have the faith and just keep moving forward.
That's right. Did I mention this? I think Becky mentioned it, Brian.
Yes.
We are the only live podcast.
Mike, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I got a lot of good comments about Becky's reads.
Becky's reads were great.
They were fantastic.
It was way better than something you would have played. So
yeah.
It was good.
She did a great job.
She did a great job. This is the only live podcast that does a mystery tackle box unboxing, and we're going to do it right now. Just Mark, this is how this works. Yes.
Good.
Okay.
No.
All right. This is my favorite part is the noise of breaking the seal. You ready? Love that part. Mark, here's the rule. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to let you start. You're the guest. I'm going to have you pick out one bait in here. You pick anything else that catches your fancy. Pass it to me. I'll pass it to Dave. We'll pass it to Brian. And then we're going to have you analyze that lure. That's it, okay?
Okay.
So you get to pick one thing out, anything you want in there, just something that catches your eye, something that maybe you'd want to try or something that you hadn't thought about that catches your eye, and we'll discuss what lures are in here. Definitely, we're doing a Pro Box tonight, Bry.
Yes.
Instead of the we've been doing the Elite boxes, the Green Box, the last few shows. Tonight we're mixing it up. We're going back to a Pro Box, which I still love. Still love the Pro Box.
Settle in. He bid on something.
Okay. We got one thing there. I'm going here, Dave.
That's the first thing you grabbed, dude.
I know. I looked at it, and I instantly kind of liked it. And then, Dave, when you're done, pass it to Brian.
I got mine.
Okay. Dave's got his. We'll go to Brian the Carpenter.
Let me see what else is in there before I give it to Brian.
Oh, so
no, I'm happy.
Make sure you get. Are you happy with that?
Yeah, I'm happy with what I got.
All right, Mark, what do you got? Let's.
You know what I got, dude? Took your life.
Oh, look at that. All right, what do you
got? Your life with this, bro.
The Live Magic Shed, Lake Fork Minnow.
Okay, Lake Fork Magic Shed. That's a good one.
It looks like a good one. Looked like it'd be a great chatterbait trailer.
Yeah.
And maybe just a little old Texas rig.
Yep. I like the color, too.
I like the
little
color.
Bait fish looking color, green and white.
It's got the white belly. It's got the watermelon back, black flake, little red flake.
There you go.
Absolutely.
All right.
I wouldn't be afraid to throw it down on the flats, that's for sure.
Definitely on the back.
I didn't even look at the back. Like I said, just Texas rig.
Texas rig?
I think that's how it would
maybe be. Weightless, maybe on the back of a chatterbait. Yeah. I like it. I've got something here. I honestly have never seen this bait before in my life at all. And I like it because it's like a combo of two things. This is a Rip Snorter by Chase Baits. It's a soft minnow bait, Texas rigged, with a little blade at the bottom.
A little bass.
Yeah, like a little fish head spin. So it's a combination of a swim bait and a fish head spin together. I like it because it has a hook that's weedless. I can see throwing this thing around cover. When they're dialed into a bait fish shape, look at that little thing.
Absolutely.
I like it. All right, Dave, what do you got?
I have something amazing.
Okay.
I have Big Spawn's Rattlebot.
Ooh.
A little crawfish.
Ah, a little rattle trap
bait. And I only took this because this is a similar bait that before it was called yo-yoing. I didn't know it was called yo-yoing. I yo-yoed a classic Top Rod Championship away from Brian with a bait that looked similar to this.
All these years later, still rubbing it in.
Feel how sticky those hooks are.
Oh, heck yeah. It's got them. Yeah. Ooh.
Let Mark check them hooks.
Wow. It's got a nice
sticky
little
those
knocker
hooks are,
in
dude.
It.
Yeah, it's true.
Huh.
Came right in on my...
Oh, wow.
Oh, you're saying Dave moved in on you?
Yeah. Well, you know that one. That was Mike that we conspired against you.
Yeah, that's all right. That's okay.
So this trophy's on my wall. It's on my look at me wall.
I never got a dang trophy for nothing.
That's all right. You got a trophy in our heart and soul, Brian.
Yeah, I finished second in everything.
You know what I also like about this, Dave, real quick? It's textured.
Yeah.
It has texture. And a lot of rattle baits don't have texture. Yeah, you know what I mean? So
it
I like
has
that.
Definitely, yeah. And this is something I would never have bought unless I subscribed to this platform here.
It's cool. Dude. Brian DeCarpenter, what do you got in the MTB box?
Beats the hell out of me.
Okay.
What we got? We got 10,000 Fishes Summer Shad. They actually make some pretty neat baits, this company, 10,000 Fish. And
you've seen some of their stuff?
I've seen some of their stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different. It's neat. And this is what that is. It's one of these. I don't know.
I can see that on a drop shot.
Yeah, it's a big bait for a drop shot, though.
Yeah, I could see it on a drop shot, though.
Would you mope it?
It's got a little fin tail.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Let me see that.
A little tickler.
Oh, hell yeah.
What's
the
deal
that
where they kind of troll it?
Wow.
They
kinda,
moping
that.
Or...
Give me that.
Moping or...
There's some other...
That's way right,
like a
Dabiki
style rig.
Yeah.
Hover strolling.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Hover stroking.
Stroke.
It's got I put an open jig head on this up on like Champlain.
Yeah, see the silver foil it's got in it?
Yes.
Little metal flash strip.
That's
pretty dope, dude. I can see that working.
Yeah, they got some neat baits, man.
Huh.
A few of them.
Are they expensive?
I think they make that spinner bait or that bait that looks like a spinner bait.
That bait looks expensive. Are they expensive?
I don't know.
Yeah, that looks expensive, dude.
Huh. I like that foil in there.
That is not cheap. There were some good baits.
There were some good baits in that Pro Box tonight.
That's right. We had a lot of activity on the board tonight. And, dude, we got to send some shout-outs to people that were at the event yesterday. We had some cool people show up and donate their time. Our buddy Keith Thomas.
Shout out to Keith Thomas.
Yeah, he came out there and was with you guys all day.
Yeah, we had so many volunteers. I think we ended up, it was funny because about 2 weeks before the event, maybe 3 weeks before the event, we had 3 volunteers. And we were like, oh, my God, this is not good because we have a kids event. We have to run fish. And then, like, I posted a couple messages, and we ended up having, I think, about 20 volunteers yesterday.
Oh,
so.
Nice.
Shout out to all the volunteers that came out yesterday. We also had a couple students from the Bass Fishing Club at Penn State University. So thank you guys as well for showing up to help. That was awesome. Yeah, Brian, that was great. It was good to see Keith out there, and Keith helped with the kids event. That was cool, man.
Mike on. And Max, young Max.
Young Max.
Yeah, did you get to meet
him? Yeah, I spent a lot of time with Max.
He's cool, man.
He's a cool dude.
That kid's got a lot of personality.
Is
that the dude who's hanging around the truck?
Yeah.
When I was talking to you?
Yeah,
that kid's legit.
He helped take a picture. Yeah,
that kid's legit, man.
Yeah, he...
Dave, he's great.
Yeah, he's legit, dude.
He's awesome, man.
But
he brought his video stuff. And so this kid's probably, how old do you think he is?
12?
14, maybe.
Yeah, 12, 13, 14,
yeah, 12.
Something like that.
He's a big kid.
Yeah,
dude, he's tall.
He literally brought his like little camera, his GoPro, his like YouTube camera, and he was talking to Vegas, and he was telling him, oh yeah, you gotta have this, and he was schooling Vegas on what to do, like how to capture content, which I thought was really cool. I'm like, you know, I could see like an adult doing that, but it's like a kid teaching a kid.
I watched him content in your boat that's out front right now. I watched him content the whole thing, like talking about it, man. Yeah. Like he had the camera. Yeah, he was set up.
Wow.
He's wise beyond his years.
Yeah. He's a good kid. He's going to be successful, whatever he does.
A lot of personality. I dig that kid, man.
Yeah, that was cool. It was cool to meet
Bridget?
Him. Bridget was there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Did you get to talk to
her? No, I didn't see her, dude.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, we saw a senior.
Her in a while.
Dave Senior was there.
Mm-hmm.
Saw Senior. We talked to Senior.
Yep.
I asked him how he'd cooked all them catfish. That's all I could think of. I caught like six catfish in one day on a spinnerbait. I was like, God, well, I would love to kill every one of you guys right now. Like, you're taking this $9 revenge spinnerbait and twisting it on me. I would kill every one of you if I knew how to do it. You know what I mean?
Oh, Senior would know how to do it, man.
He knows how to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And make it delicious.
Oh, he makes his own tartar sauce. Fresh bread, lettuce.
You lived through all that. We got none of that.
Well, that's what you get for not showing up. When I invited you every goddamn weekend, David.
Yeah.
Every one of them.
I know. I'm sorry.
Oh, you know what, dude? Shout out to Michael Berry. Michael Berry is he's a guy from Oklahoma, and he's been an Ike Live fan or, you know, a follower of ours for a long, long time. And dude made some baits. I'm going to bring these over to you, Mike.
Mike Berry, huh?
Yeah.
Mike Berry.
Yeah.
Oklahoma?
The Okie.
Let me see some Oklahoma baits.
Skanoke, whatever that song is.
Is that Mike?
Mm. Wow. Swim baits.
Oh, the theme, though. Ooh. They got themes on them.
Oh, let me see that.
Wow.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. No, he didn't.
So dope.
Oh, he didn't.
What?
Stock of walking. That is not certs in his pocket, ladies and gentlemen.
It's cool. Little DT 14 size bait there.
Let me see that one.
A couple square bills.
I want to see that DT.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Pretty baits, dude.
Yeah,
nice
so that
finish.
DT's solid resin, Mike.
Is that really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. What does that mean? I wonder what the buoyancy is.
This looks like something that would hang from your rear view mirror, you know? Like, I would hang that. No, I'm not saying don't throw the bait, but you don't want to wreck it.
No, I know. It's cool how you got that logo in there like that.
It's an heirloom. Wow.
Yeah, they're going to have to stay in the studio.
It's an heirloom for Vegas.
Yeah, that's got a big one knocker in it.
Dang.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But he's undergone some health issues, man.
It's like a 9mm serious, round in there.
Like me and Pete met him and his son at the Classic in Oklahoma. When was the last Oklahoma Classic?
Oh, shit. A Grand Lake?
Grand, yeah.
Yeah.
Three or four years ago.
Can I steal
this? Ago? Yeah, take that.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, they're for you guys.
Oh, I'm stealing the Char Blue, my man. Thank you, sir.
That's a good one. Appreciate it. It's a good looking one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, well, shout out to Mike. Yeah. What's he got going on? Some health issues?
Yeah, man. Like, got to learn how to walk again.
Oh, man.
Oh, Jesus.
Serious business. Yeah.
Now, how much is he making these, Brian? Like, the whole kit and caboodle?
Yeah. Dude, he sent me years ago a Forerunner to the Tokyo rig.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's
I remember that.
Yes.
Yeah, we were still downstairs in the studio in the other place. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's all about it. He's living the life. He's a tinkerer.
All right.
Yeah, he's no joke.
Well, we're thinking about him. Shout out to him. Hope you're getting better.
Mike Berry.
Dude, what a great show. Like, I'm still in awe that this happened tonight, that we got to get everybody together, talk shop, big win.
Yeah.
This is just cool, man.
Yeah.
This is just cool. Like I said, 6 years. I had a lot of amazing moments handing those awards away, but that one yesterday was really special, and I'm glad you won.
I appreciate it
for you.
Same here, dude.
I appreciate
it. Yeah, very,
I appreciate
very
it. I've had a lot of people reach out to me.
Yeah,
you know, guys like the Solis and Mansu, and I had guys call me that, you know, that I just fished the trails. Was like, dude, they seen it, and I guess because they know what I went through.
Yeah,
and it's just. It just makes you feel good inside that you touched that many people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just to be able to share.
Yeah, but you earned your rep, dude. Earned your rep, man.
I guess. I mean,
You know,
I work hard at what I do. I put in the time. I just,
yeah.
You know, I don't think I'm anybody different than anybody else. I just go out and do my thing. And, you know, I don't try to, you know, cut anybody off. Just I do unto others. I had them do unto me.
Yeah.
And just. You know, over time you perfect your craft, and to be able to come down there and get that out. That's, dude, I mean, not just because it's a tournament win, the way it all went down, the whole Ike Foundation. I mean, how ironic that the past 2 years, last year was a father son combination, and this year was a father daughter that won a benefit tournament that's for Take a Kid Fishing.
Yeah. Isn't that cool? That
dude,
is true.
Is so
I didn't think. I actually didn't think about that until you just said that.
Yeah, nice. Oh yeah,
that's
dude.
Freaking awesome.
Yeah.
It's wow. Really cool.
It's like awesome. It's so. You know, you. It's like you as the hosting and, you know, with your charity that you're running, to sit there and write a script. You and Becky, you guys could sit down and say, look, we want to have a charity tournament, you know, for kids. And, you know, let's wouldn't it be great? Let's have a father and son win. That would really be good for the for our charity. Let's have a father-daughter win, because obviously these are parents that introduced their kids to fishing.
Right.
No doubt. And that's when we were talking earlier about the single mom wanting to – I ran into them, too, at the different sports expos that I would do, you know, to help the federation, all that stuff. And I think that's the most important thing, that the parents, even though they don't know nothing about fishing, don't – your kid might.
Yeah.
You know, you're fortunate that your son, Vegas, he's looks like he wants to be a fisherman.
Yeah.
But he might not.
Right. Yeah.
So, he's still your son, but you still introduce them to the outdoors, you know?
Like the sport, like being outside, like fishing, whatever, if it's for fun or competitive or anything in between.
Go catch bluegills. You know? No, nobody says you got to, you know, do what we do and, you know, buy these big bass boats and go out there and do all that. It's just get outdoors, go fishing, and if you're inspiring to become a professional, make a living at it, the opportunity is there.
Yeah.
And the knowledge is there. The information's there. It's... I think hard, it's hard to make, but coming from where we came from, I think it's easier. Because only easier to the point of guidance.
Right.
You still have to be the person inside to make it happen, but there's a roadmap.
Yeah.
You know, dude, I struggled for all those years, and finally Pete says, well, you know, because I have my own business now, I worked my family business, and I was able to work on the side. Like, you know, all the shows, all the stuff that you have to do to put in for your sponsors.
Yeah.
I said, dude, I said, I don't get it. I said, I don't know what to do. But he says, well, be your own sponsor. So that's what I focused on.
Yeah.
So I work real hard at myself and, you know, and hurry up and get done work dark to dark. And now here we are fishing. And like you said, just to win that tournament yesterday, to share it with my daughter, I hope other people get to experience that because there's –
that's awesome.
That's – to me, it was just
– beyond driving away with this boat, you earned something that – most guys don't. Like, you don't know my name, but I knew who you were. You know? Like, that's something that's earned. Yeah. That's not something – I don't know the name of the guys who won that boat last year, but I knew you coming into this.
I appreciate that.
I knew your boat coming into this, you know? Like, and that's something that's earned. And, you know, you definitely cashed in, my man, on many years of grinding.
You've done good, Mark. And,
and I'm not done.
Yeah, and I know you've got a quest to make the classic.
Yep.
I know you can do it, dude. We're rooting for you. I know you've got the skill and the desire to do it. I know you can do it. I want to see it a classic.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Just don't know when.
Yeah. And maybe we'll fish the same classic.
That would be awesome.
I'm not sure I'm done yet either. I might make an announcement about this announcement a little later on another show. But I'm not saying I'm done with classics yet either. So, you know, just going to leave it there. Real quick, Brian DeCarpenter, I want to just remind everybody, Father's Day is coming up, of course. Some great Father's Day gifts from our sponsors here, Dave. Mystery Tackle Box makes a great sponsor. Brian DeCarpenter, stick your foot up there. Show them those beautiful Heshy socks. They make great Father's Day gifts.
There he is.
Look at these socks. Look at that Pippi Longstocking there.
Legs
legs on fire.
Legs only Cyndi Lauper can love.
Right. Only Cyndi Lauper can love those.
Cyndi Lauper. Which, by the way, Dave.
Go ahead.
It's the first concert.
My very first concert I ever went to see. I went and saw it with Mark Keogh.
Mark, you and Mark Keogh at a
Cyndi
Lauper concert.
Me and Mark
Keogh
were in the audience. She's like, he's looking at me. Like, he thought she was looking at him. Yeah. We were like 55 feet from Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, wow.
He thought he saw her.
Were you enough to get the sweat off of her hair when she shook? Or were you that close or not close
They
enough?
Were free tickets. I mean, I was like, I was half excited to be there, but I wasn't like totally in. But he was like full in the Cyndi Lauper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Good for
him. Did she have a – who was the – who was her manager or the guy?
Not Lou Albano. I think he was a part. Captain Lou wasn't part of it yet. He was still managing wrestling at the time.
He wasn't a part of that yet?
No. That wasn't until the Goonies video. Okay. Sorry, everybody
Goonies
watching.
Video.
I'm sorry.
They don't even know what the Goonies video is.
He drugged me into it.
Yeah. in addition, I know Becky mentioned it, but Empire Covers makes a great Father's Day gift. They make a cover for anything. From, you know, a full-size bass boat to an RV to a lawnmower. And also, they have a new line of American Eagle
covers, which is 100% USA made.
Nice.
That's important, right? That's
absolutely
a good
thing. United States of Kentucky, everybody.
Right. United States of Kentucky. Dude, it's been a terrific show, Brian Carpenter. You have any last little bits, tidbits you want to throw out there?
Probably. I leave Wednesday for the Classic.
Yeah.
Bass University is going to be at the Bassmaster Classic.
That's right.
Texas, where we go?
Houston?
No.
Dallas?
No.
No.
Fort Worth.
But that's, yeah, same airport. Dallas. Yeah. So we're going there.
Cool.
That's kind of cool. The only Classic I ever will attend was in Birmingham.
The COVID Classic. Everybody was giving each other COVID.
So awesome.
And we didn't know yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
You were awesome there, man.
Yeah, it's like attending the Super Bowl in, I don't know, pitch blackness.
Like the Fog Bowl or something?
Yeah. Like it's the only Bears game in the Fog Bowl.
Yeah.
Yay, Dad. Thanks for the front row seats. This is awesome.
Well, here's the
great fog.
But here's something to aspire to, Dave.
What's that?
Just on that note. Next year's Classic, they already announced it, Lake Hartwell.
That's a good one.
Which is in Greenville, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Great city.
Right on the border.
Like, no.
That's
good
a great
city.
City, man.
It's not a Birmingham city. It's a really,
it's
like,
different,
fun,
man. It's not
nice,
like, yeah,
crisp, clean.
You're downtown. You're sitting at a red light.
You'd like that one.
Rush hour on midweek with the window down. There's no sound. There's no smell. It's just the light
sounds
changes
like a dream.
And you go. You know what I mean? It's nothing like what we're used to.
And then an old teacher shows up in your dream and pitches you on the ass. I don't know. Like,
and you're naked.
Yeah.
And then you're late to school and naked.
And then there's this clap of lightning.
Yeah, cough.
And it all starts going in reverse.
Oh, yeah. I had that dream. All right. This is getting weird.
Yeah.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I want to thank everybody for watching. I want to thank our guest. Mark Shaver, thank you for coming
you,
in and hanging with us.
Thank you.
Great show. I want to thank our TV guests, Dave Mansu and Bob Soley, for joining us.
Right,
they were awesome guests as well.
Yeah.
And everybody else, Dave Brodzik, Brian DeCarpenter, thank you guys.
Yes, and Mark's daughter who put him on the meat.
Yes.
Sam. Come on, man. How cool was that?
That
Sam
was
Flynn.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yes. Sam.
Very, what's cool. She going to do with her half of the cut? Did she say yet?
No, she's still when she came in this morning, because her and her girlfriend, they went down to North Carolina, down the Outer Banks, and she's just grinning ear.
That's
ear.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's
as it should be.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's like, yeah, I said, when the guy offered 10 grand for the vote, she said, "We'll take it." I'm like, "No." She goes, "What?" I'm like, "It's going to be more than that." She goes, "What?"
Is she watching?
I don't know.
Don't listen to your parents. Buy all the cool stuff you want to buy. Don't put it in the bag. Spend it.
Yeah, Michelle said she's watching. That's awesome. Yeah, she was. I was hoping she would be able to go. When Brian called, I was like, "Ah, shoot, she's not going to be able to make it." But that would have been because she was really excited.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw, she posted actually when we were on stage, she videoed us.
That's awesome.
Well, you know,
I
these kids
that.
Today,
that's
they're all,
great.
Yeah, they're all the time. Like, I don't think of that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And
did she got that? She got that when you jumped up on stage there?
Yeah, when we were up on stage and Mike was talking.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, and she's sitting there video, because then when you gave us the trophies, she actually takes it and she's like,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I want that video.
Michelle probably, she shared it on Facebook, and then
that was a cool moment.
It was
man.
A cool moment.
It was really cool.
It was a very cool moment.
Like I said, I appreciate anybody that watches this, that did reach out to me. That's what hits the heart.
Yeah.
And it's, you know,
yeah,
at least I know it's, I don't know, like I said, I have a lot of respect out there for everybody, and I'm really honored and humbled of the reactions I got from this win, because I've had other wins. I've done a lot of good things, and but this time around, this is like, wow. This is almost like winning a Classic, the way people are reacting.
It was a great win. You deserved it. The fact that you were fishing with your daughter made it even better. That was like icing on the cake.
Dude, she was waffled all day long. She was catching fish all day long. And then she put a big one in the boat to call out the little one.
Awesome.
That was the greatest.
It's awesome.
The right person won, man.
Yeah, the right person
won. I don't know if we said it earlier, but, like, I know we talked about it. Like, I was, you know, I fished with Bob, and Bob's been through a rough time recently, and he's, you know, Bob's like, man, I need a win. And I'm like, man, I'm in a slump, dude. I need a freaking win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, you know, and Mark wins it, and you hear what he's been going through, yeah. and just the whole story behind it. The right person won.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, all the stupid shit that's going on in the world and all the negativity.
Yeah.
This was the yin to that. Yeah. This was
it's the right thing. It's the opposite of all the negative bullshit.
Yeah, like the trolls on YouTube. Yeah. This is the opposite of that.
Perfect.
You know, this was positivity.
Yep. Happens when it's supposed to, which is awesome.
Yeah. I almost feel bad, like 24 hours ago, grinding my teeth in the left lane doing 110 up 95, leaving in anger, dude.
I'm like a dickhead now.
You should have stopped at the Goose. Had an Orange Crusher 5.
Yeah, I would have been grinding my teeth
the whole way back. The whole way back home, Dave's like, fucking McGraw.
No, not at all, dude. Grohl and I fish well together.
Better than you and Brian.
Oh, don't you start that one.
That didn't go well last time.
At least you didn't.
I thought it went great. I don't know what the hell. I think it's all fake news. I mean, I had a good time. We didn't have a shot. He called small fish. It's fun.
Is it fake news? Is this like the Fauci emails?
I don't know nothing.
Okay.
Brian's upset about that.
Talk about Fauci's emails.
Oh, okay.
I'm not upset about nothing.
Are you upset about Fauci emails?
Absolutely not.
Oh.
I'm looking out for your stupid-ass career so that people don't talk about this shit on your show and ruin your career.
That your self-educated friends can unravel in one minute.
This shit don't matter to me, homie.
What, just because we don't talk about politics or religion on the show, think it doesn't matter?
Let's go. I'll go home. I still got work tomorrow.
I'm out.
No, I will not be responsible.
No, we wouldn't do that to everybody anyway.
No.
thank everybody for watching. Oh,
one more.
Sorry. Go ahead. What do you got?
Oliver and Riley came into town for this event.
They did.
Dude,
that meant so much. That really did.
I mean, like, he came to the Northeast from New York City.
Dude, he's
for that event.
Well, I told him when he got here. He landed here like Thursday from
Tuesday.
Was it Tuesday?
Came in Tuesday and then flew from California to Jersey on Tuesday. Got an Uber from Philly to your place.
Right.
Got his rig and drove to New York and then filmed for three straight days.
Fished a tournament.
Oh, yeah.
On Friday. Drove from in New York City. Drove Friday night down here to a hotel, right?
No, they stayed up there.
They stayed up there. They drove from there down?
Yeah.
Oh!
They drove from New York City down to the.
That's
down
hard.
To
New York. Dude.
When we pulled in, when I told you, like, I saw you at 8 o'clock where you were at 8 a.m., Oliver was cutting through there. John's like, damn, I don't know who anybody is. John's like, he's in it to win it. There's Oliver like, what? Flinging these giant, like, you know, glide bait just on like 5, 6. Just cutting through, dude. He was just hammering, dude.
Out there in middle ditch just
slinging?
He was slinging?
Just slinging, man.
And then 2 hours later, he was taking a nap.
The burn. The burn hit.
That scene in middle ditch
is
not a... Not a good representation of anything.
No. It looked like a game of killed a man.
Oh, man.
It was terrible, dude.
I don't know.
I was apologizing to people all day long. Because I was in the back of Sully's boat.
Yeah. Oh,
and
man.
He's just straight looking down at the graph and, like...
Running over people's lines.
Oh. I'm just like... All right, there's nothing on here that says who I am. All right. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, that's funny for you to be doing that,
Black
dude.
Tape, like, over
you're
the
usually
live.
The guy that's like, fuck you, I'll fucking...
Nah.
You would have wore in the face.
Well, nah, yeah. I mean, I had one time.
Nah, other times.
Probably two times.
Yeah.
200,
yeah,
2,000.
Yeah,
what's
exactly.
The difference? It's also two.
Flog it.
Yeah. Yeah, shout out to Oliver for showing up. That was cool.
Yeah,
definitely. All right.
That's it.
That's it.
Trent
Go
Cole,
ahead.
Man.
All right.
And Trent Cole.
Good to see Trent Cole up in there, dude. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Reno.
Reno had a good finish.
Reno
dude.
Came in third.
Yeah.
Hell
damn.
Yeah.
Yes,
17
did.
Pounds.
Reno 911.
Yeah. All right. Hope everyone had a great night watching. I hope you have a good week. We'll see you at the next show. Good night, everybody. Bye. Bye-bye.
4.5-inch drop shot worm. Bama bug. Finesse jig, PB&J. Give me something hard. Hey, KVD here. I didn't always know this much about fishing. 4-0 EWG worm hook. In fact, there was a time when I couldn't tell the difference between a jerkbait and a stickbait. But then I signed up for Mystery Tackle Box, the original monthly tackle subscription. And now I know more about fishing than I do about Calculus.
And he knows a lot about Calculus.
Plus, I get amazing extras like free fishing magazines. October 2016, Featured article, four places to throw a frog.
Exclusive decals. Zombie bass. And how-to videos for all the great baits I receive. How to tune a crankbait. Is that underwater footage I smell?
I got goosebumps.
So if you're looking to develop enhanced fishing abilities like me, or you just like getting new tackle every month, go to MysteryTackleBox.com and get your box today. Ooh, live minnows. Is it lunchtime already? Nature's candy.
Oh. Is he in my pocket?
This time of year, I definitely recommend putting a little bit of this on your soft plastics, too. There he is. Another one. Next cast. And that would be number 6. I'm addicted. I'll admit it. I'm straight addicted.
Might be bigger.
You think so?
Yeah. Feels bigger. I haven't even seen this thing yet. It doesn't want to come up. Don't break me off the rocks.
Oh, it's a... Oh! Oh!
27 incher.
He caught it. Oh my god, that's such a healthy fish. Look at the size.
Put a little liquid mayhem on your crappy jig, and look where the stripers get it.
You can't even see it, man.
That might be a keeper.
You take pride in your boat, so it deserves the best protection possible. Our durable woven fabric prevents ripping and provides UV protection. And our tape seams provide protection against the elements. The heavy-duty shock cord hem and strap and buckle system provide a tight and secure fit. Our top-of-the-line boat covers come with a ventilation system to keep your boat free from mold buildup. Empire Covers, protecting what you love.
This is your tackle. Not that kind of tackle. You use it to catch this, or this, or this. You also use this, and that, and these. This is your environment. So is this. You love it, live for it, but it will turn this into that. This is the Flambeau Z-Rust Max Tuftainer Series. These are fully infused with exclusive Z-Rust VCI anti-corrosion technology. This is a U.S. naval battleship. The same Z-Rust technology used here has been used on those to protect advanced weapon systems from corrosion in conditions like these. For the fish, it's invisible, odorless, tasteless. And for you, it's FDA-safe anti-rust protection for a minimum of 5 years. This is the next level of tackle management. Not that kind of management. This is the Flambeau legacy of tackle systems. What's your tackle worth?
It's more than who you are. It's who you're with. And it's more than what you do. It's where you do it. Tin Cup Mountain Whiskey.